This podcast contains adult language and stories of true crime. If you don't like laughing, crying, or being horrified at the actions of other humans, this podcast is not for you.
This episode of Resolved Mysteries is where we're just going to read the stuff you've sent right back to you. It's called a listener short stack.
It's brought to you by you.
Oh, so nice of you to do that for yourself.
By you, honeys. If you're looking for regular episodes, they're called anything but listener short stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on that feed. You can find them.
Yep.
But stick around for this one, too. Carlin has our first story.
I have an update.
Oh, I'm like a news reporter. Over to Carlin.
In the field. I'm not in the field. I'm in my attic.
In the attic.
Okay. This is an update about the Alonzo Brooks case, you guys, from the reboot.
Yes.
So this information came out a couple weeks ago. According to a new report by a federal forensic examiner, Alonzo Brooks' death has been ruled a homicide.
Thank goodness.
Ugh.
We all knew it was, but now it's official.
Shocker, shocker.
The FBI said as part of a continuing federal investigation into the death of Alonzo Brooks, his body was exhumed and taken to Dover Air Force Base for examination. The examiner's report concludes that the case was a homicide. In an article from Fox4KC.com, Acting U.S. Attorney Dustin Slinkard said, "We knew that Alonzo Brooks died under very suspicious circumstances. This new examination by a team of the world's best forensic pathologists and experts establishes it was no accident. Alonzo Brooks was killed. We are doing everything we can and will spare no resources to bring those responsible to justice."
Nice.
The new autopsy focuses on injuries to parts of Brooks's body that the examiner concluded are inconsistent with normal patterns of decomposition. Details of the examination are being withheld for investigative purposes. In 2019, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Kansas and the FBI reopened the investigation of Brooks's death, which had been dormant for years.
They're coming for ya.
Yep.
Partygoers.
Yeah. You better run.
It's sad that it took all this to make it happen again, yeah. But I'm glad it's happening.
If you were at that party, you might as well get that $100,000 reward before they fucking come find you anyway, you idiot.
Just, for real.
Yeah, what is happening?
Turn on those redneck racist fucks and sell them out and get that cash.
Absolutely.
Money.
You're not a teenager anymore. What reason is there for you to protect these dumbasses? Like,
yeah.
None.
Murderers. Okay, so I have another update, although it is not as compelling. A while back, gosh, what was that, episode 5 or something?
Oh my gosh, early, yeah.
Oh, wow. I covered D.B. Cooper.
Ever heard of him?
I don't know if you guys know who D.B. Cooper is. Actually, maybe you don't. I don't know. We assume a lot of knowledge around here. So D.B. Cooper famously hijacked a plane, got a bunch of money, and parachuted out of the plane with the money, and people for decades have speculated whether or not the person who went by D.B. Cooper, first of all, who he was, and second of all, did he survive the fall, and is he living somewhere with all of his money? Oh, no, he's not, because they found the money.
Yes.
In the lake, right.
Or some of the money?
I don't know if we know if it was all of
it. Yeah, it was some of the money.
And we love this case because it's a Pacific Northwest mystery.
Exactly.
Among many reasons. But if you don't know about it, go back and listen to our episode, which is for free on Patreon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
While I was covering that case, I talked about a lot of suspects, and there are tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them was a man named Sheridan Peterson, and he passed away in January 8th. So this article came out a while back, and he was 94. Peterson was a big personality. He loved skydiving and taking physical risks, even reportedly, quote, experimenting with homemade bat wings.
Oh, no.
These were the key reasons his name has flitted for years around internet message boards devoted to the D.B. Cooper case. Phoenix entrepreneur Eric Ulis spent years trying to figure out if Peterson was the famous criminal, ultimately becoming 98% convinced that he was. Ulis believes that Peterson's experiences in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War, quote, radicalized him, prompting him to undertake the skyjacking. Apparently, FBI agents questioned Peterson and took a DNA swab from him. I think this was back in 2014, and the FBI has never said anything about Peterson's sample, even though it publicly ruled out other Cooper case suspects via DNA. Mm-hmm. The Bureau has stated, however, it believes the skyjacker, whoever he was, most likely died on the night of the heist. So one of the biggest possibilities passed away at the old age of 94.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the more of them die, it's like the least likely we are to solve it unless there's a death by confession.
Yep. And that makes me think that it wasn't Peterson. He apparently was very coy about it. And he had said in an interview that all of his friends thought that he was D.B. Cooper, you know, and he said it just made sense. Apparently, he did an ad for some sort of company at some point, and in the ad, he was skydiving in a suit and tie. And he had the same shoes on down to the loafers.
Oh, my God.
So he was like, you know, that's probably why I'm D.B. Cooper. There was a lot of coincidences.
Tongue-in-cheek stuff.
Uh-huh. But apparently when things got real and he was seriously questioned by the FBI, he claimed that he was in Nepal at the time, and both of his children were actually born in Nepal around that time. So he may have been there, but I think he just liked to play with it. You know, why not?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I completely agree. If you are D.B. Cooper, why would you not tell people on your deathbed?
Yes, I know.
Why would you not take the glory of like
exactly? Yes.
I'm surprised more people haven't actually
right
like faked it or something.
Totally. We had that one listener write in who it wasn't her stepfather, but it was like her stepfather's brother was another one of the people in the UM episode who they were like, "Is it this guy?" Mm-hmm. And the person that wrote in said, "No. Absolutely not. It is not that guy. That guy is a liar, and we think it's hysterical that anyone thinks it could be that guy."
Oh, my gosh.
But it's a good mystery.
DB, if you're out there, just write us a quick email.
Yes. Reveal yourself.
Just let us know.
We won't even tell anybody. We won't tell.
Reach out, DB. Okay. This one is from Ruth via email. So Ruth says, "Hi, I just found this podcast a few weeks ago. I am currently back on episode 20, way back when in season one."
Oh, so many people are jealous of you. Isn't it the best to be still early on in a
and able to binge?
Just to have seasons upon seasons waiting. She says, "But I didn't want to wait to tell you guys about the unresolved solve on the Palmer family history mystery." So, a little backstory. I started watching Unsolved during the summers with my Nana. She passed away in January of 2020 at 97 from just being done with life, not COVID.
Aww.
That's a sweet way to say it. She was an amazing woman and loved Scandal TV.
Yes.
Love it. She would start watching the TV at like 1 in the afternoon. She'd watch her judges, in parentheses, Judy and the old dude. Then she'd just watch Entertainment Tonight and A Current Affair. Then UM and John Walsh, America's Most Wanted.
Love that lineup.
Summers with her were awesome. Anyway, I grew up in Easton, Pennsylvania, and my mom was very involved with the Block Watch and making our streets safer. This meant that she worked closely with the local PD and got to know the chief of police, Larry Palmer. So back to UM. One summer night, Graham and I were watching the show when the Lost Love segment about Ken Palmer, who met his double at the Baltimore train station during World War II. When I saw Ken, I thought, that sort of looks like Larry Palmer. But I was like 11 and couldn't call my mom from the wilds of New Jersey, Gramps Farm, because long distance was expensive as hell. Yes, girl. Oh, my gosh. Fast forward a few years later, I was at home watching a Lifetime Network marathon of UM, and I caught the Palmer family segment again. I started yelling for my mom, and she came in and agreed with me. When they mentioned that the family may have been from New Jersey, my mom volunteered that Larry's uncle taught her in school in Phillipsburg, New Jersey.
Oh my gosh!
We tried to find one of my mom's yearbooks to compare the pictures, but couldn't find the yearbooks. I did call 1-800-876-5353 and left a tip about the story.
Ah! Yes!
They put me in touch with the researcher, but I was told that since Ken Palmer passed and so did Larry's dad and uncle, they couldn't definitively solve the case. But the UM researchers did think this was the right answer.
Oh my gosh!
That's so cool.
Yeah, so this, it looks like this episode first aired in 1995.
Okay. So we're a little ways out. There will never be a true update, sadly, unless Larry and Ken Palmer's family do DNA, and I'm not sure how likely this is. If you have any questions you want to ask me about this, please let me know. Thanks. I've also included some pictures of Ken Palmer and Larry Palmer. The chin really gets me. So I'm looking at these chins, and they are...
Are they the same
chins?
They're
similar chins. They're like those little bottom of an apple type chins.
Like a cleft chin, like the, not a cleft
chin. Not almost cleft, but not quite.
Oh, so cute. I love that. Yeah. That's so fun.
Oh,
that's
my gosh. We have never had someone write in that called in to leave a tip.
So
that's
cool.
That's so fun. Ah, oh, Ruth, thank you for sharing your story. That's great.
That's great.
Thank you, Ruth.
All right. I have a message from Rainy. They say, hello, I love your podcast and look forward to new episodes every other week. While listening to the episode Tchotchke Dream, you guys talked about how it was weird that Conradina Olsen would only invite her oldest son to go with her. I agree with you, but also had something similar happen in my own family. Mm. Thanks to DNA sites, a few years ago, we were able to solve the mystery of my father's biological parents.
Huh.
My biological grandmother had a number of children, some while she was married, and others, like my dad, out of wedlock. She either abandoned them with their fathers or gave them up for adoption, all except for her eldest son. Similar to Conradina, my bio-grandmother ran away from an abusive first marriage, but she took her eldest son with her. Mm. For the next few decades, she moved multiple times, married multiple times, had multiple children, and left them all except for her eldest son. Hmm. She always brought him with her and even left him with relatives at times and would come back for him. He is still alive but not eager to talk about her, and he says he doesn't remember having siblings despite there being pictures of him with his siblings. And he acknowledges that he is the oldest child in those pictures. My dad, having been adopted, had no idea he existed, but there were other siblings who spent time with him and remembered him and were in fact looking for not only their mother, but their older brother. Hmm. This is a true lost love.
Yes.
This would have been a good story for the original UM. Seriously. Wow. Yeah. Especially because they all got scattered, kind of, mm-hmm. and had different names and all that. The only thing we can guess was that since he was her first child, she felt the most bonded to him. However, both she and her various husbands slash baby daddies have passed away. We don't know the rhyme or reason for her choices, but my father, who grew up as an adopted only child, found out about his heritage, learned the general circumstances of his birth, and most importantly, found out he has 9 brothers and sisters. Oh my gosh. And has spent a few years now getting to know a few of them.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And they all have different life experiences, too.
Wow. Oh,
that is amazing. Speaking of this, just reading this, this also makes me think maybe you take the eldest son because you are alone in this world in a time that's a long time ago. So having eventually a teenage son mm-hmm. will help you get money or help protect you mm-hmm. or, you know, there's also just like monetary value in having a boy with you probably. That's,
yeah, I had that thought too. And I think we might have talked about this when we did that case, but also like that child is going to remember, whereas the little ones may not even remember you. And maybe that's like the best scenario for their life. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Rainy, that is a great one. Thank you.
Yeah,
wow. That was amazing. So this comes to us from Mary via email. And she says, hey, honeys, I was surprised to hear Allison bring up the case of Ruth Finley when she covered the Cindy James case. I was born in the Wichita area and lived there most of my life before moving to the Pacific Northwest about 10 years ago. So I was in elementary school when this all happened. This was during the height of BTK's terrifying grip on the city. Ugh. So when, quote, the poet came into the public eye in late 1978, it was yet another chilling reminder that we were not safe, even in our own homes. K Kansas was full of small towns and rural communities, and Wichita in the 70s was still a mid-sized city, even though it was the largest in the area. The big cities like Kansas City or Oklahoma City were still 3 hours away. Things like that just didn't happen there. We are so desensitized to things like this today, but in the 70s, it was no joke. It was on the evening news every night and the newspapers every morning. We were all afraid for our lives. Young and old, men and women, it did not matter. We were terrified. Although Ruth was found to be the culprit of the letters, phone calls, and attacks on herself, and it is largely called a, quote, hoax on the internet today, I was still very scared at the time. She says, I personally wouldn't even call it a hoax, since it is questionable whether Ruth did all of these things knowingly or if she really disassociated. There is a book about this case called Little Girl Fly Away by Jean Stone, and it is revealed that Ruth was severely abused as a child for years. The things that eventually made, quote, the poet emerge from her psyche were a series of stressors in her life, including her husband's health issues and, you guessed it, the horrors of BTK.
Oh, wow.
The fact that Ruth started receiving poems from the stalker is not a coincidence. The latest BTK communication had been the, quote, Shirley Locks poem sent to the Wichita Eagle Beacon newspaper in January of 1978, followed only a couple weeks later by the, quote, O Death letter sent to the KAKE television station, which was a parody of the old folk song of the same name. In both, BTK described two of the murders that he had committed. Of course, they were published in the paper and aired on TV. This constant taunting and playing with the police in public was so frightening, people were moving to the suburbs to escape to safer ground. Every time I hear the Cindy James case covered on podcasts or television, I always think of Ruth, but so many don't mention her, and I wonder why. Maybe it's because, as usual, the cases we hear about are the pretty young blonde woman and not necessarily the middle-aged housewives. So bottom line, Cindy James could have done all of those things to herself, but I doubt we'll ever know for sure. These cases from my childhood might have been what started my interest in true crime. I remember watching the original UM when it first aired, so hearing you ladies dig into the segments and give updates is so cool. During the last year of the pandemic, my daughter has been home from college, and I introduced her to the podcast.
Mm. Oh,
so great. So I got to listen to all the episodes a second time with her.
Aww.
Gosh.
She says,
you, honey.
I know. She's a sweetie. Anyway, I have lots of stories to tell you. One of my college instructors was the actual detective that caught BTK.
I just got goosebumps.
Wow.
She says, RIP Lieutenant Landwehr, you were a great teacher, and I appreciated you not keeping us in class until 10 p.m. because we all had hard day jobs to go to the next day. Oh. Ain't nobody got time for that nonsense.
Truly.
And she says, and the still unsolved murder of an acquaintance of mine from the 1990s. But I will save them for future emails. Thanks for all that you do and for being my podcast besties.
Aww.
Because I moved to the Portland area right before the pandemic, and I have not been able to leave my house to make any friends in person yet.
Girl, aww. We are here with you.
Yes. Love, Mary. Oh, my gosh. Mary, we would love to hear your stories. That is incredible. And it's a really interesting story because you don't even think about how these serial killers are affecting just the average person day to day.
Totally.
Yeah.
This woman could have been truly triggered by what BTK did. And it's just like another example of how horrific these serial killings are and how they affect the community in ways that you don't even think about.
Mm-hmm.
Great email.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay, this one is from Shelley via email. Hi, ladies. I've recently discovered your podcast and am a big fan. I've almost listened to them all already. I thought I'd tell you about a guy I went to school with who admitted murdering a U.S. Marine and is now languishing in Thai jail.
Whoa.
I went to primary school with this guy, and even when he was 7 years old, he was terrifying. That's scary.
A terrifying 7-year-old is scarier than a terrifying 40-year-old.
Mm. It's true.
He would fight everyone and turn over tables. We ended up having to be told by teachers to run away if he kicked off, as the dinner ladies, in parentheses, not sure what you guys call them in the U.S., lunch supervisors? I think we just say lunch ladies.
We call them lunch ladies. We just say dinner and lunch at different times.
Yes.
Well, you don't say lunch. Yeah.
Yeah. So, ended up having to be told by teachers to run away if he kicked off, as the dinner ladies had to physically restrain him while he was raging and screaming. Mm. I believe he was eventually expelled as the school just couldn't cope with him.
which is also very sad. I always remember this one class photo we had where he was scowling like a complete maniac with a scratched and bruised face while all the other seven-year-olds were all grinning toothily at the camera. Mm. Next time I'm back home, I'll send it to you because it's chilling.
Oh, gosh.
Who knows what was going on in that kid's life? Yes.
So sad.
Because something is happening to make this happen. Anyway, as an adult me and some friends were talking about strange people we went to school with, and I decided to Google this guy, and the articles that came up were all kickboxer Pitbull jailed for killing Marine.
Oh my gosh.
You can read the articles below, but safe to say it was not really a surprise to me. He clearly had a lot going on from a young age, and this is where he ended up. So one of the articles she sent wasn't there anymore, but the other one is here, and it's very short, so I'm just going to read it. It's titled, Kickboxer Lee Aldhouse Jailed for Thai Murder. And this is from 2013. A British kickboxer has been sentenced to 25 years in jail in Thailand for the murder of a former U.S. Marine on a resort island. Lee Aldhouse from Birmingham pleaded guilty to stabbing to death 23-year-old Deshaun Longfellow in 2010 after being beaten up by the military veteran during a brawl at a Phuket bar.
Whoa.
The Phuket Provincial Court reduced Aldhouse's sentence from a life term because of his guilty plea. He had initially denied the murder charge. Aldhouse was a semi-professional kickboxer who fought under the name Pitbull, which is scary. He had been living on and off in Phuket, where Mr. Longfellow was also studying the sport. Aldhouse was arrested at London's Heathrow Airport after fleeing Thailand. He was held in the UK for almost 2 years before he became the first Briton to be extradited to Thailand under a century-old treaty. Lawyer Kampan Sirawatunyu said Aldhouse was considering whether to appeal. Quote, he prefers to be in Thai jail rather than serve his sentence in Britain because he said there is a royal pardon once or twice a year here.
Huh.
Mr. Longfellow's mother said her son was in Thailand after serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, where he was injured when a roadside bomb exploded under his vehicle.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Ugh. And she says, thanks so much. Really enjoy the podcast. TTFN, in parentheses, ta-ta for now, which you don't have to explain to this poo-loving crew.
Yeah, we've watched Winnie the Pooh and read it. Excuse
me. We know, honey.
We live that poo life.
I was poo-bearing it this morning because I couldn't find any pants for a minute.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Shelly.
Good one. Okay, Jackie K via email sent us a message with two stories. I'm going to read one of them. So she says, I have two murders I was close to. One was a teacher. The other was my childhood neighbor and friend. I lived in Franklin, Kentucky and in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So here's the one. In 2011, Jamie Stice was abducted and killed as her unborn child was... Okay, big trigger warning here. We've heard this story before, but as her unborn child was cut from her body by a woman she met on Facebook.
Oh, I remember
this. This is the one where she was going to get free baby items from this woman.
Yes.
The murderer, Kathy Coy of Morgantown, then tried to pass the baby off as her own in order to save her failing marriage. She showed up at the medical center, and they immediately knew something was wrong because, oh, Jesus Christ. Because attached to the amniotic sac were ovaries.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that part.
They later found the mother, Jamie, in a field near a dirt road in Oakland, Kentucky. She had been tased and her wrist slit and stomach opened with a box cutter.
Oh, my gosh.
Kathy had been telling everyone for months that she was pregnant. And then our writer says, I have pictures of Jamie sitting in our garage holding my ferret that I treasure. She was a very kind and too trusting person. Kathy eventually was charged of the allegations of butchering a pregnant woman and removing the baby and has pleaded guilty but mentally ill. Oh my gosh. So then there's just a little more information. Ugh, but the baby boy that was removed from the body survived.
Okay.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
And so sad.
Oh, that, my gosh.
Like, there are several stories like that, as we know, but that is one of the more brutal that I've heard.
Ugh. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, terrible.
Terrible. So this, I'm guessing this is her childhood neighbor that she was close to. So sad, Jackie. Oh, too terrible. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you for writing to us with your stories. And please, please send us more stories. We love them. We love hearing from you all. And we love reading your stuff back to you. And we love the engagement that it creates with our community. So yeah, if you want to email us favorite unsolved mystery story, cold case, anything that you're either connected with or interested in, any nostalgia you have surrounding the show, if you could email us or message us and just make sure that you put it in your own words. If you want to contact us, you can contact us on Instagram at Resolved Mysteries Podcast or on Facebook and Twitter at Resolve the Pod. Or you can contact us at resolvedmysteriespodcast.com, resolvedmysteriespodcast@gmail.com, or, oh my God, we got a package. We should open that up. Or at our P.O. Box 14005, Portland, Oregon 97293. Let me get the package. Give me one second.
Let's open the package.
Open it up.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. No? Okay.
My vaccine brain totally forgot.
Vaccine brain, the best kind of brain to have. Brain.
Okay, so this is from our listener, Philip, in North Carolina. Philip is on our Facebook group because he just commented recently about the Edgar Casey.
Oh, cool. Uh-huh.
Segment. So I remember his name. And it is The Trial of Lizzie Borden, a true story by Kara Robertson. And he wrote Sisters in Snark. Oh, my God. And he sent a little card with a dog and an American flag. It's so cute.
He knows you love a golden.
And America.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It says, Allison, Eliza, and Carlin, I randomly bought this book at Barnes & Noble during the, quote, before times and finally got around to reading it. I thought I would post it to y'all. I honestly know nothing about this other than Lizzie Borden and Axe, so the whole story was a roller coaster for me. Thanks for all the wonderful podcast work. Patronly yours, Philip. Love this. Philip, thank you so much. I'm so glad that I remembered.
Thanks, Philip. That was so nice. Haven't we had a person write in that was related to Lizzie Borden?
We've had something Lizzie Borden before, and I almost did Lizzie Borden when I did Massachusetts for Patreon.
Right.
I don't actually know that much about it either, so I'm excited to read
it. I know, Axe and Blood and scary things.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Philip, thank you so much.
That was really nice.
Yeah. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you like us, leave a 5-star review and tell a friend. We're absolutely still giving away magnets. So if you leave a review, you'll get a magnet. Just screenshot your review and send it to us at resolvedmysteriespodcast@gmail.com. And that's it. So please write to us and send us stuff because we love doing this. And we also love getting books. I mean, that's like my favorite thing.
Oh, come on. So cool.
Oh, and if you screenshot your review, make sure and send it to us, make sure you also send us your mailing address.
Yes, so that you can get that sweet, sweet magnet. All right, Resolvers, we love you so.
Love you. Carlin, are you ready to say goodbye?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if she was done talking.
You want to stick around for a little bit longer?
Goodbye.
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 And Philip, you need to know that both Allison and my daughter say your name every single day because they pretend that they, this is a real long, confusing story, but basically they pretend that their hands are characters and that one hand will be Philip from Hamilton and the other hand might be Eliza or whoever. Yeah. Not me, Eliza, but Eliza from Hamilton. Anyway, so we hear your name. I hear your name every single day. Like Philip today was just learning how to clean up crumbs from the table. Eliza was teaching him how. So
good job, Philip.
That's maybe why when I saw Philip comment on the Facebook comment, I remembered that his name was Philip because I hear the name Philip all of the time.
Constantly.
Yes.